This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of February 7th, 2021. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 172. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. The Is It Just Me commentary. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And the big deal feature. Should this summer's Tokyo Olympics be cancelled because of the pandemic? Should the world boycott next winter's Beijing Olympics because of human rights abuses by China? Jules Boykoff, a political science professor and author of several books on the Olympics industry, joins me to ponder those questions. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or are you ever surprised why the public loses trust and confidence in politicians and bureaucrats? I'm not, because they keep finding new ways to let us down. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau said on Tuesday that we're getting a vaccine factory, but the small print says it won't be pumping out doses until 2022. Then on Wednesday, to change the channel, he declared the Proud Boys a terrorist organization. Why not the day before? Why not a week before? The very same day, $5 million in Canadian university research grants were announced for Huawei, the Chinese tech giant that other democracies are avoiding. And to end the week, Canada is now lining up with third world countries in the COVAX vaccine program. The Canadian vaccine program is so slow and so poorly managed that Canada is resorting to this avenue. No other G7 country is doing the same. In BC, there was an announcement of a mask mandate for high schools on Thursday, but it's really nothing new. Students must wear masks, except when they're at their desks. Are we to believe that the virus doesn't spread when a student sneezes or coughs while sitting down at a desk? And in City of Vancouver, foot dragging on the Strathcona Park Autonomous Zone. Spaz. After one resident was charged with posing as a cop and murdering a senior citizen in her home in another part of the city. It is the latest death connected to this sad camp. Our politicians are working glacially slow to find a solution. They need to find homes and a hand up for those who need it, and they need to get the physically and mentally ill from that camp into the healthcare system. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news.
Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In Apple Daily, Hong Kong authorities force Canadian-Chinese dual citizen to choose one nationality in prison. It is believed to be the first known case since the dual citizenship dispute has recently emerged in Hong Kong. Global Affairs Canada did not reveal any personal details of the Canadian-Chinese prisoner, but said that the person would have forfeited the rights to receive consular assistance from the Canadian government had the person declared themselves to be a Chinese national. It is currently unclear which choice was eventually made in this case. Beijing does not recognize dual citizenship and no longer recognizes the special British national overseas passport issued to Hong Kongers. In the Japan Times, Mori's sexist remarks likely to create further headwinds for Tokyo Olympics. During a Japanese Olympic Committee meeting, Tokyo Organizing Committee President Yoshiro Mori said, quote, "Meetings of boards of directors with a lot of women take so much time. Women have a strong sense of rivalry. If one female member raises her hand to speak, all the others feel the need to speak too," end quote. Tokyo Governor Yuriko Koike said the comments were impermissible, and she told reporters that she was at a loss of words when she learned about the remarks. Instead of calls to resign, Mori apologized. In news.com.au, they showed up from nowhere. Mouse plague hits parts of Australia. Huge numbers of mice have infested rural New South Wales and parts of other Australian states, making their way into people's homes and threatening to ruin crops. Heavy rainfall has meant good breeding conditions for mice. During a previous mouse plague in 1984, a farmer was shown on the evening news using a flamethrower to wipe out mice eating his crops. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Seattle Times, warning sign for downtown? Seattle sees biggest drop in demand for office space. In Seattle, the number of workers in office jobs is actually up by a little over 1%. But interest in leasing new office space has fallen furthest from pre-pandemic levels in Seattle when compared with other major markets. That's according to a new report from New York-based VTS, which provides leasing and asset management software for commercial real estate landlords. In February, Seattle had an index score of 86. By December of last year, it had fallen to 17. That's an 80% drop, which is the largest among the seven markets included in the study. In the Bellingham Herald, NTSB says this is what caused the 2019 propane tanker crash at Cherry Point Pier. Poor bridge resource management and a non-pertinent conversation with the pilot and ship's master were blamed in the investigation. A 741-foot liquid petroleum gas tanker called Levant crashed into the pier on December 15, 2019, causing almost $8 million damage. Nobody was injured. In Czech news, Transport Canada extends current ban on cruise ships until 2022. According to the Greater Victoria Harbour Authority, cruising represents more than 70% of annual revenues, which it estimates would have been more than $12.5 million in 2020. Cutbacks include the planting and care of the Welcome to Victoria Garden. With all 287 ship calls for the year now canceled, locals will be counted on to help businesses keep their doors open. And these headlines in the Breaker.News. ICBC pandemic rebates may not be feasible as Monopoly spends millions on new ads. NPA directors sue Mayor Kennedy Stewart for defamation. BCLC paid American company, not Canadian charity, when Webro Kielberger spoke at casino. Read the stories behind these headlines at thebreaker.news. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. The Tokyo Olympics are scheduled to begin July 23rd, a year late due to the global coronavirus pandemic. The pandemic will not be over by this summer, and the International Olympic Committee President Thomas Bach says there is no plan B.
We are not losing our time and energy on speculations, but we are fully concentrating on the opening ceremony on the 23rd of July this year. So we are not speculating of whether the games are taking place. We are working on how the games will take place.
Meanwhile, the one-year countdown to the Beijing 2022 Winter Olympics began last week amid calls for a boycott or relocation because of China's human rights record.
China is honoring its promise to host the 2022 Winter Games. President Xi has personally extended an invitation to the world, welcoming friends from afar.
2022年, 相约北京, 欢迎你们, 欢迎朋友们.
China is the world's number one human rights offender. 1 million people are jailed in Xinjiang because they're Muslim. Beijing has taken control of Hong Kong, Tibetans and Inner Mongolians remain second-class citizens, and China is threatening to invade self-governing Taiwan. My guest is Jules Boykoff, professor of political science at Pacific University in Oregon. He studies the politics of the mega events industry and is the author of 5 books. The latest is No Olympians, Inside the Fight Against Capitalist Mega Sports in Los Angeles, Tokyo, and Beyond, published by Fernwood.
Yeah, this is a situation where religious discrimination on a mass scale has not been seen in the world really since before World War II, when it was the Jews in Germany. Here we have Muslims in China, and how can the world be expected to gather in peace, for the athletes to gather in peace in Beijing for the Games of Ice and Snow, when there are people in that same country that men, women and children as well, who are being incarcerated based on their religion, about who they worship.
I mean, it is astonishing. It's an obvious human rights violation. And I guess it probably needs to be said, certainly to the International Olympic Committee, that what you're talking about, Bob, very much clashes with the ideals that are enmeshed in the Olympic Charter. It almost goes without saying, there's nothing talking about the kind of cruelties to humanity that you're discussing that's happening in China right now. And yet, it's almost as if the International Olympic Committee hasn't read its own charter when it comes to human rights and freedoms. There is pressure from outside groups to really institute human rights in more IOC documents. And if you look at the host city contract, there will be human rights language. There is human rights language in the Paris Agreement for their host city agreement, as well as for the Los Angeles Olympics slated for 2028. You notice the city that doesn't have a signature in the host city agreement with human rights in it, and that is Beijing. They just kind of conveniently said, "No, don't worry about it." They said that they made the rule after they had won the Olympics, quite conveniently. Like, you couldn't just write it back in if you wanted to. And so, you know, there's a lot of shimmying left and right by the International Olympic Committee, very much trying not to raise the issues that you are, but it's a serious problem what's happening there, and it's only going to get more intense the closer we get to the games. You know, I must say, though, you know, speaking to you here from the United States, I have to be extremely leery of the fact that China has essentially become a bipartisan punching bag, and it's super easy to say whatever you want about China in a negative way if you're Biden, if you're a Trump supporter, for that matter. So, you know, there's a little bit of that. It's almost too easy to pick on Beijing, but there's no question. There's just a mountain of evidence out there right now with religious-based kind of discrimination and all manner of human rights violations. It's only getting worse. I mean, we're talking the most horrific things that humans can do to each other is being done in Xinjiang province, and yet they're going to host the Olympics. But last point on this for me, Bob, is, you know, I'm also coming to you from the United States, and if you want to talk about human rights violations, I think you could look at many major cities on the West Coast where I live that have a human rights crisis in plain sight in the form of homelessness. Look at Los Angeles, slated to host the 2028 Olympics. By some counts, they have more than 100,000 people who are homeless in Los Angeles County, 100,000. And so, you know, I think we need to be able to look in the mirror with some of these policies as well. It's not the same as Xinjiang province. I'm definitely not saying that. What I am saying is the United States needs to be held to the same standards that we talk about when we talk about Beijing.
When Beijing was awarded the Summer Olympics for 2008, the West believed that opening China to trade, tourism, and sports would help China become more democratic. But under Xi Jinping today, China has become a dictatorship. I asked Jules Boykoff about the possibility of the propaganda win for Xi Jinping and the Chinese Communist Party if Beijing, not Tokyo, is the next Olympic Games.
I mean, going back to the 2008 Summer Olympics that you covered, I mean, there were huge restrictions, censorship restrictions in place in Beijing. And, you know, if you talk to Sophie Richardson of Human Rights Watch, she'll tell you that the Beijing 2008 Games were actually a catalyst for human rights abuses, a catalyst. So you'd think that the International Olympic Committee might have learned something from that experience, but instead they turned around and handed him another Olympics in 2015. I mean, there weren't many people that wanted to be hosting those Olympics, but they knew what was going on in China, and yet they decided to give them the Olympics anyways. And so, you know, that really raises the possibility of we're moving down a path where, because of the sport washing value of the Olympics, like you described, Bob, where Beijing is going to be able to look big on the world stage and look important on the world stage during the Olympics, because that's such a big thing, that just might be the continuing place to go for the International Olympic Committee. It's such a hassle to take things like to Vancouver, where you're going to find resistance, or to Los Angeles, where the resistance continues to build, or Paris, where the fight back is only growing against the Olympics. You know, why not just take it to places where you're not going to get the pushback? I mean, Jerome Valk from FIFA many years ago, sort of sister organization to that International Olympic Committee, Jerome Valk said quite openly it was much more pleasant and easy to work with people that weren't in democracies. And he was talking in particular about Russia, but, you know, he could have been talking about China or elsewhere as well. Well, it always surprised me that the International Olympic Committee decided to only push it back 1 year rather than two, because they could have relied on the tradition of through the early 1990s of having the Olympics in the same year, and it would have been much less riskier. So because of the knowledge that was coming out about the time made it pretty clear that we were in for a long haul struggle, and yet they went for the 1 year. I personally have been arguing for cancellation. I mean, I've been arguing for cancellation of the Tokyo Olympics on public health grounds since last March. And so we've only seen the pandemic intensify since then, including in Japan, where we've seen a recent upsurge and where the country was put on a state of emergency lockdown in and around Tokyo. And like, there's less and less support for the Olympics. About 80% of the population either wants to cancel or postpone. So there's just so many reasons to cancel. But you know, the big one for me is definitely this is a potential public health nightmare. You could create a big old petri dish of coronavirus in Tokyo if you're not careful. And I can see why people in Tokyo wouldn't be thrilled about people coming from places like the United States, where coronavirus is running rampant, into the country and hanging out and bopping around and attending events around the Olympics. I can see how they might not like that. I mean, and so the vaccinations aren't going to be rolled out by then. And most countries that unfortunately are experiencing sort of an eco-apartheid right now are at the end of the line for their vaccines. And so, you know, there's not going to be everybody vaccinated. I don't really see why you need to put so many people at risk for an optional sports spectacle. I do see why the IOC wants to do it. It's all about the money. I do see why Tokyo might want to do it. It's partly about the money, also about maybe a little bit of pride. But if you're talking about the greater humanity that the Olympics so much says they care about, it doesn't make a lot of sense to push ahead with the Olympics, certainly not in 2021.
One of the headlines this week out of Japan, the Tokyo Medical Association says there will not be enough doctors and nurses available to volunteer for the Tokyo Olympics because of the pandemic.
I think the IOC is making a big mistake by not heeding that warning. They can't just bring in doctors from around the world either, because the rest of the world is facing this. Mm-hmm. I think this is one of the most serious areas there, where essential services are now looking like they're at risk in Tokyo. That should be a major reason to rethink holding the games this year.
Yeah, that's a great point, Bob. And, you know, there are real reasons why 80% of the population in Japan do not want to host the Olympics this summer. It's no accident that we're seeing these numbers consistently now. And like you say, in Japan, the medical system is already being pushed to the maximum. There was the president of the Japan Medical Association recently said that hospital occupancy rates in the country meant it would be impossible to admit any international visitors who attended the Tokyo Games and got the coronavirus. Like, that's not exactly super inviting for the tourists. And he's not alone. I mean, there's this other infectious disease specialist named Kentaro Iwata, who said, why are we doing this right now? I mean, the pandemic is worse now in Tokyo and Japan more widely than it was a year ago. And he's like, why are we taking this risk? I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. So, you know, don't take it from if you don't want to take it from the Olympics people, definitely listen to the health experts, and not to mention the free labor that the Olympics are often run off of, you know, the sort of volunteer labor. It's not just doctors who volunteer their time, but there's just like tens of thousands of people who do, instead of getting paid employment. But I suppose that's a whole different road. But you're absolutely right. I think this is a much more important story than it's getting talked about right now in the press.
So what happens to the International Olympic Committee and the mega events industry if Tokyo is canceled and or Beijing is boycotted? Could this force the IOC to change its business model to rotate the games between cities that have already hosted the games and have the infrastructure?
I mean, there are a lot of moving parts in there, including, will Tokyo happen? If Tokyo does not happen and they cancel Tokyo outright, which they said there's no plan B here, that it's either going to happen or they're going to cancel. Well, the IOC can collect a pretty big sum of insurance money. So can the Tokyo Organizing Committee. So that'll help keep them maybe afloat toward Beijing. I don't see Beijing not happening. You know, China has a lot of influence in the world. There are plenty of countries that are going to want to come there. And I haven't seen anything really about too serious about an athlete boycott. That could be the one dagger in the back of the games. But if it's just diplomats that aren't going to show up, I'm not sure how really effective that is for torpedoing Beijing. So I think there's a lot of ifs with both games, but I think Beijing is probably almost for sure going to happen. The IOC has made it clear that it's willing to sacrifice its human rights principles on the altar of the money-making machine known as China. So that's probably going to happen. But as for the other suggestions, you know, Bob, you almost sound too reasonable. I mean, all those sound so, you know, sensible that unfortunately that probably means they're not going to get a fair shake within the International Olympic Committee. I mean, this is a land of caviar and ascots, a land of luxury bunkers now in the age of coronavirus. And if they can squeeze out these next two Olympics, even if it's just a made-for-TV event for Tokyo, which is pretty much just fine for them, they weren't going to get much of the ticket money anyways. That was going to be for the local organizers. They're going to be just fine. They're going to get their broadcast money from Beijing, and then they're going to move on toward Paris. So they're going to squeak out of this thing probably. So I just don't think that I don't know them, of course, but based on the actions that they've taken over the last few years, they don't show a lot of desire to change their course. They keep ramming ahead. That's sort of the modus operandi for Thomas Bach and his leadership style, very authoritarian in terms of how he runs that show. And he's not a guy that likes to change course in a bunch of different directions. So no, I don't see much change coming from the International Olympic Committee. We obviously should see a lot of change in the way the Olympics happen, but not with this crew.
That was my guest, Jules Boykoff, professor of political science at Pacific University in Oregon. Jules Boykoff studies the politics of the mega events industry and is the author of 5 books. The latest is No Olympians, Inside the Fight Against Capitalist Mega Sports in Los Angeles, Tokyo, and Beyond, published by Fernwood.
Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to the men and women who run churches, synagogues, mosques, and temples across BC, who used World Interfaith Harmony Week from February 1st to 7th to celebrate peace, love, and understanding. There is more that unites us than divides us. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of February 7th, 2021. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on February 7th in 1894, Thomas Edison made a kinetoscopic film of a person sneezing? On the same day, Edison worker William Kennedy Dixon patented the motion picture film. Now you know. Send me your feedback and send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.